Checking back in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for a Tacky Talk after my week's vacation. How are you, Tacky?
Hey Joe, good to see you. I hope you enjoyed your time off. You're well deserved. And we are well, we're closing on the dog days of summer as the state primaries are going to pop up on Tuesday.
It is hard to believe that Labor Day is only a few short days away. Yeah, it's incredible this year.
Yeah, and it's been a fun-filled month of hot, cold, rain, humidity, no humidity. Forest fire impact still from Canada. Those of us who have felt like we've been having an allergy attack or some respiratory issues certain times of days this month, plus tropical storm near misses. It's been actually quite an eventful, very eventful weather month. And what is about 10:18 in the morning right now and on the 29th.
Yeah, and this week we have to worry about mosquitoes and
There's been an increased detection by Department of Public Health on Triple E. This is actually very concerning. As you all know, it's been raining incessantly, and it creates a lot of still water, more than normal, and actually affects the water quality along the beaches too, as the cities and towns use storm drains to flush storm water into the ocean, with Quincy Bay or directly into the ocean, depending where you are in the state. And obviously, we strongly discourage putting animal waste or any other toxic or non-natural products into the drainage system because it goes straight to the ocean, but also adds to the higher bacteria counts, and also gets still water around people's homes, where it'd be, flower buckets. Like, I have a flower bed over here that I have to make sure that the water is not building up. You don't want mosquito eggs being laid. It takes about 2 weeks or less for mosquitoes to come out of egg laying, but still, they carry diseases with them. And there's increased spraying on mosquito control, I believe, in Bristol and Plymouth County right now. And, as I said, I saw Department of Public Health Quincy pickup over here where I live, because I'm across from Black Creek Marshes across the street from me. And I'm sure they're all getting samples at one time. I'm sure they're all over the city getting samples, water samples, to see where we are. But this is a legit problem right now. I mean, people need to be increasingly careful, especially in the dusk and evening. Wear repellent, long short sleeve shirts. But also, just because you live in an urban area, it doesn't mean you're immune from Triple E. Mosquitoes do kind of like to travel, and people kind of make a mistake that just because you're in an urban environment doesn't mean you can't be impacted.
Oh yeah, we have those hardy city mosquitoes for sure.
Yeah, there's enough of them, and it's big enough for them. They could be a real nuisance. It's just, for better or for worse, the evenings have also been either rainy or, unusually humid. So it does discourage people who want to do, long, long excursions, unless you're like, you're a jogger or something, which I am not. I'm always envious of folks that are much more physically fit than I am. But yeah, I mean, just be a little bit more careful. I mean, obviously, those of us in Quincy live by marsh life our whole lives. So, it's not like I don't know what mosquito bites are. But yeah, just, we just gotta be a little more careful. And also, COVID is up. Summer COVID is a real thing. The end-of-array wastewater has shown that COVID levels are higher, and there's some more hospitalizations, but we're far, far, far away from the critical levels we experienced in the past. And there will be a new COVID vaccine and a new influenza vaccine, I believe. New flu shot is coming out as well, this September. Now, I don't know when, but it's en route. And the way we do our flu shots is looking at the southern part of the hemisphere, because we have, their summer is our winter and vice versa. So they look at the strains floating around here to formulate their influenza shots. And then, they look at us from the southern hemisphere to figure out what their influenza shots should look like. So, I obviously encourage vaccination, but, the option is available for you if you choose to do so, and most insurance will cover it.
Absolutely, yep. How has the summer been over on Quincy Shore Drive? I know that there was some funding for increased state patrols this year.
It's been really good. I can hear disturbances, not as, obviously I don't live right at Quincy Shore Drive, but open marshland equals open sound. So I do hear when there's like rapid speeding or the sirens or whatnot from my end of the marshland. And it seems to be pretty good. It's been very busy beach here. I think everyone's aware of this, that drives through Kenosha Drives who live near the beach. It's been very busy here because of nature, the temperature. And things seem to be okay overall. We've not heard a lot of complaints from constituents, and the police is visible. Both Quincy police and state troopers are visible on Kenosha Drive, Ferrisburg Parkway, and also the side streets. So, obviously not there every second, but you spend enough time along the way, you can see the patrols go by. So, and I've seen people catch speeders. I mean, state troopers I've seen, even in like weekday mornings, on the way to State House or other places I need to be in Quinshore Drive, and I've seen troopers pull people over.
Has the street light issue been resolved yet on the boulevard, Techie?
I'm going to talk about that with the DCR commissioner. In particular, I'm very concerned about Ferrisburg Parkway. Those of the transversal live on Ferrisburg Parkway are aware of the seemingly increasing number of lights either going out or poles missing. Feels like it. It may not be true because, probably been out for a long time, with those poles and lights, but it does feel like it every time I go down. Like, is another one off? I hate looking at it like I don't remember this being this dark here. So this is a priority issue. Now, for those who are not aware, National Grid actually owns the street lights on Crenshaw Drive and Ferrisburg Parkway. It is one of the last locations that the utility actually owns street lights. At one time, they didn't own all the street lights, utility companies. And over the many decades, they've been transferring control and ownership to those two cities and towns, as well as states. Now, the poles, in the case of telephone poles, those are still owned by utilities. In the case of Quincy, they're predominantly National Grid controlled. The street lights on those electrical poles are controlled by the city. And I was reminded by Verizon one day that the top of the line, after the major power line of the power company, is another line there that is actually a dedicated line just for the streetlights on utility poles.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I forgot all about it actually. By some reason, I got that one like blocked on my head because there's a whole sequence of pole voltage regarding what's up there. Verizon's actually up there too. That's actually not one of the low ones. Lower ones are things like your fireboxes and third-party usage. So, the top, high end of the system is the utility electrical, which in this case National Grid, the city's electrical streetlight system, and then it's Verizon. So, we talk about the double poles a lot on and off here. And if you see one line remaining at the top connected to a streetlight, that's a city, a town owned streetlight. And that's a dedicated power line. So, in that case, the city would own those. Now, the ones on Kershaw Drive and Ferrisburg Parkway are standalone. They're not part of a utility pole. And, two winters ago, at the end of the Baker administration, DCR told us with National Grid they're in the process of transferring ownership. But that was 2 winters ago. And I know the new administration, I know the new DCR commission. I'm sure there's brand new staff over at DCR. But really, I mean, 2 years?
Shouldn't take that long, yeah, right.
That's correct. So something is not right here. So, I brought this up to the commissioner earlier this year, and I'm going to have another chat about this again. This is getting kind of intolerable from my standpoint on this, on why this transfer hasn't happened. And the hope is that if DCR has controls over this, they'll have either contractors or themselves, people that can get out there and replace street light posts, as well as, get the power back on. And maybe down the road, we'll get LEDs, but one thing at a time. I mean, right now, it's one of the more antiquated light bulb systems. I mean, the city has moved to LEDs. LED lights actually keeps the skyline a little darker, and it's much more energy efficient and significantly brighter, and they're great. But, right now, I'm just trying to get lights up, much less worry about an upgrade just now.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I thought of it is because, the sun is setting earlier these days.
It is the as we Labor Day is this coming Monday, as well as the state Republican and Democratic primaries are this coming Tuesday. So we remind people that the deadline for voting is pretty much done on Friday. By the time people hear this, the opportunity has now passed to vote in City Hall. So, you got to go on Tuesday in person. I expect a very light turnout in person. I've heard that early voting has been extremely popular in Quincy. I'll be voting in person on Tuesday. I take my mom, but I actually am working because that's the day I'm seeing the DCR commissioner. So I am not campaigning in the sense that I should go around the state, we sometimes help other folks. But so, I mean, I'm in the state house on the primary day, full slate of meetings. So yeah, I got some requests to hold signs for folks, but I'm like, I got no streetlights. So gotta do what you gotta do with whatever the schedule allows.
So you're in informal session now, right, at the State House?
We are in formal sessions. There's been a lot of talk in the news last month, or not earlier this month, about the possibility of coming back, and there is a procedure to do that in the House. The House actually has a procedure that requires 21 House members. I'm sorry, not 21, 81. 21 is the Senate. 81 members in the House, the majority of the House, sign a petition to come back into session, and it must cite a specific reason to come back into session. And the 7 days from the day of petition to come back into session once the petition is filed. But you have to have a reason. You just can't randomly come back. There is a special section of the joint rules that allows a special session of the legislature where you have 21 members of the Senate and 81 members of the House sign a petition to come back in. That's a little quirky because I'm trying to figure out, since this is in the joint rules, it sounds like a constitutional convention or not. And I'm kind of scratching my head a bit. I did review the Senate rules. I can't find in the Senate rules the ability for the membership to petition return to session. So I'm not technically sure what's going on over there in the Senate, because when you read the news media articles about this, apparently the press didn't read the rules.
Okay. I'll have to ask John Keenan about that.
Yeah, I said I did a read through. I was like, I don't know if it's just something the president can just bring the Senate back in, or is it in actual processes? But the House actually has actual processes that applies any time during the year. So, for example, it's not necessarily the fact that we're out of formal sessions because of the rules, but this thing could have been applied, for example, school vacation week in February, right? The members, 81 members, could assign and bring us back in, for example. So it's a rule that could be used any time of the year, not just because we're in formal sessions. Now, the Senate, I'm not entirely clear how the Senate would work on that. I did read the rules and I'm like, I'm not sure. And the joint rules is a special session where, since there's a House and Senate initiative by both branches to create that special session, I don't know if that's like an individual branch session or is it a joint session, because the joint session generally governs constitutional conventions.
Okay. All right. So what would this be for the economic development bill? That's the big one that I can think of that didn't get to pass during the formal session.
Yeah, the economic development bill is the one that obviously gets the most media coverage, and it's a bond bill. So under three conditions, the legislature has to take a roll call vote, and they have to be regarding bond bills, Article 97, environmentally sensitive land swaps, as well as veto overrides of the governor. So those are the three circumstances that under the state constitution, you must have a roll call vote, which means you have to have a formal session. However, in formal sessions, we can still get conference bills done. They do not require a roll call vote. So, for example, we did the midwifery bill in an informal session. Then, the assisted living regulatory bill has been released from conference committee yesterday at 6 p.m., which means informal session in about 29 minutes will kick off in both the House and Senate at 11 a.m. Provided there's no objection by any single member, the conference report will be accepted and it'll start the process of engrossing it. This is kind of the interesting thing about this legislature is that, we are full time. If this was a legislature like California, where the Constitution sets the fact they prorogate, which means they completely shut down, the session's totally closed, they wouldn't be able to do this. And rush creates bad decisions sometimes, and California does that every so often.
They have a lot of repeals, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to deal with a few consumer privacy related stuff that came out of California, and I'm just like, this is insane. And I'm like, oh, that's right, they're on a deadline. So there is some advantages and disadvantages, obviously, to a full-time legislature, and we get a lot of criticism for it. But the fact we can move conference bills that are not bond bills, that are not land swaps nor governor vetoes, gives us a lot of flexibility to move forward. I mean, obviously, it'd be great to take a roll call vote, but the reality at the end of the day, is that if no one objects, it is essentially everyone accepts the comments reports. And we can move forward and get these things to the governor. So it's August, but two major bills, well, depends what you consider a major bill, that really one affects, women's health care. And the other begins the process of greater accountability on assisted living facilities. Will be taken up and put on the governor's desk this month.
Yeah, important stuff for sure. And that the ability to act that quickly, think of what a positive influence that had during the pandemic.
Yes, informal sessions during pandemic was crucial. But before we figured out how to do remote, and then we had to change the rules as well on how to do that. And it became, again, not to rehash pandemic life in the state house, but the rules, current rules that were set up had no provisions that allowed for a pandemic situation. And you did need to have something in place so everyone knows what they're doing. And it was honestly a little bit of trial and error. It's not like it was go. But I mean, the rules do allow for a state of emergencies, but state emergencies are like snowstorms here. I mean, 2 days you delayed in formal session. I mean, the rules allowed speaker and the president to close a session because of a state of emergency or move, suspend a session or move a session because of a state of emergency. Pandemic was unusual, right? Generally snowstorm, the Boston bomber, 9/11, even 9/11. I was here for 9/11 as a staffer. I mean, we just really delayed session by a day. So, it's and it wasn't even a long delay. So, so yeah, I mean, pandemic was a little bit unusual regarding, how this place operates. But, the reality in a real life situation, it's generally 1 or 2 day delays around here because of, literally it's weather most times.
We need to talk about the migrant situation, Tacky. It's in the news, of course, with folks sleeping outside the Wollaston T station again this week.
Yeah, I got grabbed during the August Moon Festival by someone want to talk about this, and it's very, very disheartening, the situation here. Obviously, I'm getting a lot of emails and criticism about the right to shelter law. I get it. I do. Problem is that people in this part of the country do see homelessness, but we don't see homelessness like we do in other places that don't have right to shelter, where you have children and pregnant women and family units on your streets. And people here aren't used to it. And let's be honest, well, you're not. You haven't seen it in since the 80s or 70s. And other parts of the country, this is normal. And their support systems have to be designed around it. And this is what's really sad. So Massachusetts has always been in the forefront of addressing this issue. And the system, as we all know, was never designed for an influx of this massive nature in such a short period of time. And I think there's always been somewhat of a belief that if you get rid of right to shelter, to go away. That is completely false. They're here because not necessarily right to shelter, but we're kind and humane people, and it gets out. And I think people forget that sometimes. And we are. And I know that we get a lot of criticism. And I always love the words, I'm a good person, or I'm not sympathetic, but. I'm like, pick a lane, buddy. Don't give me a but. You got to pick a lane in certain moral issues. You're here or you're not in terms of certain things. Because I love the everyone kept. Everyone that talks to me is like, no, but for this, but for that. I'm like, yeah, but you pick a lane, right? Let's, I talk about the reality of it. It's unsustainability economically, unsustainability regarding actual physical space available. I visited ENC this last month, and there is a legit shortage of supplies because the economy has caught up with everyone regarding inflation. People are just running out of real money in their daily lives. I'm making ends meet, and we're now watching something that predates my lifetime, and something you see in the streets of Massachusetts. And I'm aware some places have a higher homeless problem than Quincy does. We have a very good support network for Father Bells and QCAP and many other services on the South Shore. But if you talk to some of my colleagues in different parts of the state, tent cities are a real thing. And it's like a regular thing they have to deal with, particularly in some of the more rural areas of the state.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you talk to, other parts of the state, pregnant women, children are still very, very uncommon. However, homelessness looks a little bit different depending where you are. And I know Massachusetts gets a lot of attention, but this is not a unique problem to Boston. This is a problem that's really statewide. It's just that it looks a little different how homelessness appears in different parts of the state, as well as services that are available in different parts of the state. It's not like equal service every city and town. We are lucky. Quincy's a very robust service area. So, I've been bringing this attention to the T that these families are walls of station, obviously because of the vicinity ENC. Mike's biggest concern is not the families being a problem in the sense that they're going to be a problem to residents. My always concern is somebody of being stupid decides to cause trouble with these families. And it's very heartening to see the folks are trying to go down and help them out by providing some basic and essential needs. That being said, that's a stopgap measure, and summer is coming and to an end. And fall and winter is going to be coming quick, and children sleeping in the cold is even more horrific than kids sleeping outside in the summer. So I wish I had a better answer for you all, but I really don't. I understand the health codes associated with having, there was a tense situation in one of the churches, suggestion of using empty office spaces, which has been done in Boston, but it requires a renovation. Even ENC's apartments, not all of them are up to code. And we do have to consider, in addition to shelter, but the shelter has to be safe and humane. But it was like a temporary, place for folks to just hang out for a while. That's different from people staying there as a temporary residence.
I saw that just yesterday. I think the governor announced $20 million from FEMA to Massachusetts to help address this. Do you know if the Quincy Center is getting any piece of that?
Well, the ENC Center is on a separate contract,
Okay.
so it's a different issue. And the contract goes to the beginning of next year. At some point, it expires very early in 2024. I don't have an exact date. But of course, ENC is now closed. There are no classes. I obviously have a concern about the property being closed because of a big piece of property where any kind of mischief can happen by stupid people. And then I don't know what happens next, and it's very unclear to me about whether or not the ENC will have a contract extension. I know Bay State Community Services is the lead agency in Quincy on coordinating all this, as well working with Manatee Community Health Center and others. But I'm not clear what's going on yet there. It's been this entire situation is constantly in flux, and the administrations are sometimes not something always react before the legislature knows. Circumstance, they don't need our approval to do anything. If they waited for us to make a decision, it will never get done in a timely manner. So they need to do what they do it, and we find out after the fact. And that's the world we're living in, this because the nature of how it works.
I
It's
mean, yeah, I mean, big picture, obviously, it's a federal issue that needs to be dealt with on the federal level. But do you think maybe municipalities need to start to get involved too?
Municipalities are limited resources. This is the problem, right? I mean, when municipality has a resource problem, they generally come to the state level. Now the state's been stretched to the brink. We generally go to the feds, but that's very rare. Believe it or not, under federalism, the federal government has very little engagement with states that isn't a federal policy issue. COVID was the first time that I think anyone can remember where states just got money from the federal government, just to the state governments and then counties and municipalities as well. Generally, even the great financial crisis of 08, states and city and towns got no direct financial assistance from the federal government. All the money was tied to some kind of federal program. So the feds don't have a program for this type of situation. It's left to, cities, states, and depending where you are in the country, counties, because counties run government, where the oil
Yes,
is
it's true
driven.
too.
In certain places, county government controls everything. It's not
And
state.
that's by statute, right, in the US Constitution. That's states' rights.
It is a state right. It's part of the, it's actually, I think, the 10th Amendment,
That sounds right.
Which kind of bleeds into the 11th Amendment too, which came out later once they started rolling this out. But yeah, it's a piece of it's how federalism works. We saw this is COVID, not to rehash COVID, but COVID is a reflection of federalism also, it creates a really kind of complicated relationship between states and the federal government in these type of circumstances. It is not the governor, the speaker of the house, and senate president were not shy informing the membership that they are displeased with the federal delegation and have made their displeasure heard.
Yes, oh, for sure. Yeah, no question about that. Right. Yeah. It's maybe after the election, something will happen.
I couldn't tell you. The delegations at the federal level, what attention they give to us is an interesting question. Obviously, those of us live at the ground level, like state reps and mayors and counselors and state senators and selectmen and so forth, much more closer to circumstances. And we always hope the federal delegation will listen to us a little closer to the ground. And I do know that Quincy is one of the lesser impacted communities. We're not some of the other communities where you have 50 new families come out of the blue, and in a community of 10,000 people.
Right.
That's a huge impact in your local school systems as well as certain areas. And some cities and towns have zero human services. At least we have human services. Some of the more wealthier communities have no human services, and they find themselves with an influx of honestly people that don't look like them at all and don't speak English and in need of access to school and services that they're not used to need to provide. Quincy is a multiracial, large swath of different socioeconomics. And we're better prepared overall regarding dealing with all kinds of different people in all kinds of different circumstances.
Yeah.
Just my personal opinion.
Speaking of the MBTA, you're well aware, I'm sure, big shutdown coming up very soon on the Red Line.
As if life couldn't get more less fun on the Red Line. Well, there's already Red Line delays between Kendall and the Park Street station regarding renovation. The Park Street station, sadly, someone fell on the rail and died. And this is the worst kind of delay you could ever have in on the MBTA system, to be honest with you. I mean, we live with all kinds of challenges at a T on infrastructure, but absolutely possibly worse is when someone falls on the rail and dies. It had slowed down the project north of Park Street. We're going to have about 3-ish weeks, if everything goes well, to do a final maintenance check and upgrade of the entire system from JFK to Braintree, one more massive go through. And they'll be able to lift the speed restrictions by about 10 miles per hour to about 50 miles per hour for a very long time, as long as I can remember talking to the team. The speed limit was under 40 miles an hour. Adding a 10 mile an hour speed limit lift from JFK North Quincy. In particular, and particularly from Quincy Center to Quincy Adams to Braintree, will significantly speed up movement of people. You probably wouldn't even notice it is, but it does, actually does add that extra 10 miles to the difference. So there'll be shuttle buses, as I think everybody have seen shuttle buses, and they've done the math and the routes. They've done a lot of trial runs at different hours of the day. They did a lot of math and trying to figure this out. And most people are going to be shocked to hear this, but North Quincy to Ashmont's actually faster than going to JFK, especially trying to get over the Ponce Bridge during rush hour.
Ah, there's the trick. Take that line and then get back on the Braintree branch to go into South Station.
Yeah, that is the shocker. Everyone's going to find out that it's actually faster to go to Ashmont, jump on Ashmont, get to JFK than it is to try to get your over to the Ponce Bridge down Morrissey Boulevard, get into that weird rotary, past BC High, and then spin back around to JFK. It's actually faster because once you get down to Gowan Boulevard side, going the opposite direction of traffic of those heading to the expressway, it actually saves you more than 15 minutes.
Wow, that's astounding because you can practically see the two stations between each other.
North Quincy to Ashmont. I think people are going to be upset by this for whatever reason, but they have done trial runs a lot. I don't know if you've seen some of these buses already doing trial runs, but they've been trial running to Ashmont to North Quincy to see, you know, keep see what the times are. And these are real times, not just somebody sitting on Google Map. These
Right.
like time, and
Oh yeah, the
they,
big yellow Yankee buses. I've seen them, yeah.
yeah, they have been doing trial runs. So yeah, no, it's a real thing. This is not some like Google Map, you know, calculator stuff. They've been doing real time checks. So on different times of day, not just in like no traffic. It's like, you know, real traffic days. And so this, they've been doing this for a while. So I'm sure I'm going to get some complaints about that, but the math can't beat the math when they actually do real trial runs. So there's been inconvenience. I'm sorry to tell everyone that. So I was saying that, you know, once the benefits received on the MBTA that you know, after about a month, you accept it as norm and not realizing that things have gotten better. This is kind of one of the realities of this, is that you see a, you realize it's gotten better for a while, but after over time, you just don't even realize things have gotten better. And it will get better. It's, I know I say that a lot, but it will get better. It's just that it's just taking time. So hopefully this is the last, cross my fingers, major inconvenience on Braintree to JFK. I'm aware that in other parts of the MBTA, the general manager is considering major upgrades. So I can't promise you what life is like on the Orange Line, nor the Blue Line. And large chunks of the Green Line, which the T has made, you know, commitment to doing, you know, significant upgrades. And of course, they're still on top of the new rail cars that are still behind schedule and getting on the red and orange line. So, you know, those are still on right. And the MBTA wants better safety checks before putting on the rail, especially after a couple got on fire. Some people may remember that story.
Yes, a woman jumped off the Neponset Bridge, as I recall.
Yeah, the MBTA has demanded higher safety standards before they get on the rail. So that actually does create a delay when you decide to expand the review on safety before it goes on the rail system. So that
Right.
actually will slow that process down. So, you know, whether you like it or not, you can choose less safe, take your chances, you can choose safer, but you get delayed.
Time will tell.
But someone asked me about the speed delays on the T when they're doing the rail replacement. And my response was, do you like derailment or don't you? Because the under the current safety standards, they have to confirm that the new rail does not cause derailment.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But a 2 week process when new rail is laid down to confirm that it's actually correctly done. Otherwise, if it's not done, risk of derailment is the thing that is the single biggest danger on the rail system in terms of like repairs. So don't do it
Oh yeah.
correctly, that's what happened.
Oh, speaking of math, I mean you're down to millimeters when they're, you know, putting those rails down. It has to be exact.
Has to be exact. And there's no margin error. That's the standard.
So you mentioned August Moon. Anything else going on in the district?
There was a candlelight vigil for opiate
Oh, right.
on Tuesday night. Actually, I didn't find that out until reading in the Patriot Ledger, and actually already made appointments with friends that evening, so sadly I was not able to make it. Opiate abuse continues to be a major challenge in society, you know, all over the country, and Quincy does feel it like everywhere else, and sadly people pass away from this disease. And you know, I might as well do a plug here for the same thing. I'm also a little disappointed and frightened by the fact that people don't treat alcohol as a major dangerous substance as well. When you talk about opiate abuse and substance abuse, alcohol seems to be lost in the conversation for some reason again. We talk about gambling, we talk about smoking, we talk about opiates and other types of prescription drugs or similar products, but suddenly, alcohol is now no longer in the conversation as a dangerous substance. As a chairman of the committee that actually oversees the alcohol industry, the industry and us and the committee are very aware about the dangers of it. And you know, I know North Quincy High School and Quincy High, and there's a whole South Shore High School kids who are talking about alcohol, see the dangers of alcohol and what they see in public. But you know, when I hear from young adults on things like happy hours and discounted booze and we want booze to come to our home more easily. We don't care about ID checks or other types of safety provisions, which me and the industry actually do have a lot of conversations about more accountability. It is actually very concerning. So I think, this is something I just want to bring up as part of the things I deal with in sales and we'll be dealing with in this fall as we people keep coming and talk about these things. Is that, as I tell folks, I, grew up in the era of lots of drunk driving, killed a lot of teenagers, especially during working hours, not like at 1 in the morning. And, and I've over the, time I've been in office, I've had to update my knowledge about how opiate abuse works and the different types of opiates and the dangers of designer drugs, which was not my teenager years.
Right.
You have today's biochemists making very scary, much faster addicting opiates. We are actually a fairly accessible alcohol state in terms of liquor stores and bars and restaurants, especially in urban neighborhoods, especially places like Quincy. But, part of it is responsibility of consumption, and but also more importantly, understanding it is a dangerous substance.
It's an important message, especially leading into, the Labor Day weekend and then college kids returning, and unfortunately always hear about a tragic death involving a young person this time of year.
Yeah, and this is also part of the reason why I've increased state police patrols, not just addressing issues in the beach where people may be causing a bit of rowdiness, but also increase drunk driving. And we know the beachcomber's gone, which, remember correctly, the old days was that called nostalgia in the old days. The old day, I'm not that old, but there is no bar in the beach anymore, to my knowledge. So people don't bring your own with no one looking you. You shouldn't do, by the way. That is illegal. You should not have open container on the beach in any way, shape, or form. But that's what state troopers are there for, right? To make sure that everybody, is safe. The Quincy cops also keep an eye on things, but also address, drunk driving or a little bit too much to grab you before you get in your car. But you also write about college students, and it seems like every time there's a story about major drinking issues on college campuses, people just kind of like, oh, well, just tell people not to do it again, but never actually talk about the serious dangers here associated with alcohol consumption. And it's a health impact, not just in the short term, but also in the long periods of your life. It does impact you down the road, just like any other substance that poisons your body. It's just you gotta know how to use it properly, and know when to stop. But I mean, GoPuff, which is a great business model because they do a delivery service. They don't actually have a store. They have a fulfillment house, which includes alcohol, and they had 100% failure rate on ID checks at one point, and they had the licenses suspended through other stores. Well, the probability is high, and actually not high, I know for a fact, actually, because inspectors told me that most of these things end up on college campuses. GoPuff delivered to college campuses in particular, and young people's homes near campuses, and did not check ID and just dropped off alcohol. I always had problems with alcohol to go during COVID and post-COVID because, you watch delivery services, they weren't checking identification. They just dropped in your doorstep and right. You have no idea on an app who the person is that is now buying alcohol. There could have been a bunch of 14-year-old kids that put a purchases on DoorDash. The DoorDash guy comes over and just drops it on the doorstep. I was watching it in my own neighborhood in Wallaston. I mean, and people acted like it was okay.
Scary.
Yeah, again, it's an interesting change of attitude I've been noticing as chair of this committee regarding alcohol usage. And this kind of debate on happy hours, I'd like to say, it's the race to the bottom. People in the restaurant industry tells me it's a terrible idea because now you're basically doing selling more alcohol for essentially less money. And once happy hour ends, no one's in the restaurant because you're not going to drink for full price after you ate all your appetizers. You're not going to pay for full meals. I mean,
Which means they're
people.
going to go out and get in their cars. Yeah.
That's correct, and that's what drives it. In other states that have happy hours, except the fact their economics, it means that they don't need to have or want to need to have a meal service after happy hour ends, or to have extended happy hours, where their economics means that wait staff makes less money on tips, and you have high drunk driving, and not all states have liability. Restaurants can't be held liable for over-serving, and we do require tips training on bartenders regarding identification of problem people having problems at the bar, and how to de-escalate and deal with it. So, but not like other states. I think we're a little bit more responsible. I think the restaurant industry is very responsible in how to address this issue. And the liquor stores, know they're under survey by municipal government as well as the ABCC regarding not serving underage. But it is the 21st century, and there's different ways of getting stuff, as I discovered. I never shopped online until COVID. Call me old-fashioned, but even this dog had to learn new tricks. Yeah, so it is what it is, and it's learning how to adapt to a changing world. This is kind of these conversations I'm having with younger folks, and it's really shows that I am getting older, and there's this real disconnect regarding, my dad had a restaurant. I'm aware of how the restaurant industry works at some level, and they these folks that enjoy happy hour, how many of them actually stay for an extra hour after happy hour? I'm going to tell you, none of them.
Right. Yeah, that's the reason they're there. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they're not going to be there 1 hour afterwards getting a regular meal.
Right. Oh boy. Well, I remember that, years ago, the Mothers Against Drunk Driving had a lot of campaigns, PSA announcements. Maybe we need to get that back.
Oh, and last time, sorry, you saw, well, I know we don't watch much TV anymore, but I don't see commercials about alcohol abuse anymore.
Right, you're right. No, I've seen more commercials about starrowing, trucks getting stuck under the star drive bridge.
Well, that's yeah. Yeah.
Which is not a good thing either.
Well, actually, one of those covered bridges, I want to say Vermont, a truck that was too heavy,
Oh.
trying to get through a covered bridge and collapsed the
Oh, I didn't
wood.
see that. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, there's a tonnage limit there for a reason.
Oh, yeah, they're only wood.
It's not an arbitrary number why there's tonnage limits on bridges.
No, they don't just make it up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's stress tested. There were. It's I'm also amazed how people ignore science.
Well, that too. Yes.
They're there for a reason. They kind of tell you what's going on. But
Exactly.
more happy, back just a little bit less dour, tacky. August Moon Festival was very good despite the rain. It's I think the second time I've been in the rain in August Moon. I'm trying to remember, it was like 2010 or 2011. I'm trying to remember where it was. Maybe in 2011, maybe. I'm trying to remember. But yeah, it's my lifetime when it canceled once because of wind in 2003, because of a tropical storm passing through, the tents would not be on the ground. It was a major wind situation. It was great to see a lot of folks there despite the weather. I did not pass out all my paper fans this year. I have another box downstairs in the basement. Generally, I had depleted all my supplies, but the weather was not cooperating in that fashion. Again, much thanks to Queen's Jason Resources, their staff and volunteers, the City of Quincy, the School Department, the Parks Department, the DPW, the City Police, EMS, parks, it's just all of them, an entire city government, putting a lot of work with Queen's Jason Resources to make a premier festival in the South Shore. It's easily one of the top five biggest Asian events inside New England at this point.
Wow, that's great. Yep. It was, I think, the 37th this year.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
a long history. Other than a couple of delays regarding weather and COVID, this event has run continuously sometime in the month of August, generally the week after the one in Chinatown. Almost nonstop. As a guy who actually put together about a dozen himself when we had no money. I mean, I was doing this on $2,000 at one point way back in my young. Found some pictures of me younger. I was like, this is a lot like a lifetime ago. But yeah, I mean, this has been an event started to Walsh with the church and then migrated around to North Quincy High School to Billings Road because I actually closed part of Billings Road to do this. And back to North Quincy T Station, Camden Marketplace, Quincy Center, Hancock Street, back to North Quincy High at one point. I'm sorry, North Quincy, a T station or a temporary situation. And now settled in front of Claudian Street, in front of the high school in the Y and the Claudian building. And that actually, honestly, is the perfect location. And I can't see us ever being anywhere else because of Flag Day and other events, the city is very aware on how to manage traffic in that area.
Yep. Seems to really work out well. It's becoming much more of a like a campus setting in that area now.
Absolutely. And it's a trial and error. It's kind of observe this event. It's constantly an evolution, meaning that if something the public likes, they'll bring it back. If they don't like it and it isn't coming back, and then they experiment on new entertainment or new things for kids. And if it works well, they make an effort to bring it back. And
Yeah.
it's kind of one of those things that isn't stagnant. So one of the best things about in Quincy in particular, unlike other festivals, it's not just simply rinse and repeat. It's rinse, repeat, and then try something else and see what the response is. And if the public responds well, then they'll bring it back again. I was telling some Chinatown folks, some older, slightly older Chinatown folks, that the action isn't in Chinatown anymore, right? The community, as I like to remind folks, is not a monolith. I mean, there's Cambodians that have the Water Festival, actually the same weekend as August Moon in Quincy. You do have New Year's festivals in places like Randolph and Worcester. It's not strictly a Quincy Chinatown issue anymore. You have Malden with their own small events. So, it's a lot of different Asian ethnic groups, whether it be Chinese, Vietnamese, Cambodians, Indian,
Korean.
Korean. I mean, they're all over the place. And there's like a, Koreans, there's some festivals. There's a Japanese festival every spring in April, around cherry blossom season. There's a one in the Boston Common, a massive Japanese festival. So it's not all about Chinatown. And, I reminded, some of my Chinatown friends that you're behind the game in terms of it's not just human services, but community outreach and business development. The action is not Boston in the Asian community. It's pretty much, all the communities outside of Boston, from the Merrimack Valley down to the South Coast, into Central Mass and even way Western Mass. It's it really has formed their own different events and communities. And depending, like Quincy, for example, we're a human service community, we have our own human services here too. So, it's really evolved and developed far from the power center of Chinatown.
Yes, well, the Asian community now has been Massachusetts for, many, many decades. So that certainly it's grown and expanded, yeah.
Yeah, Chinese have been here in one form or another, for well past 150 years. As well, long it's a longer history story, but the New England in particular, is a crucial part of the spice and tea trade. Engagement with India and China and Japan and many other countries goes back to the colonial era. So, closing in probably 300 to 400 years of continuous contact with those countries, of which a lot of people got rich on in the New England area. You had visitors from those countries. So people treat it like a novelty in America, but no, it's actually one of the most crucial trading partners in New England for centuries, not decades, centuries. And this is kind of lost in our history books. We don't talk about it. But it's true. There's the trade between this region and different Asian countries is centuries long, despite the changing governments, the changing history, changing world events. That continues to be true today as well. I actually had a meeting with the Chinese ambassador, well, consul general, but titles ambassador out of New York. They finally had a first person meeting here with me. I've only done Zoom meetings with them, and even the airlines, nonstop airlines to China, have finally started reaching a higher capacity where they can increase number of flights a week. But they're far cry from where they were before, largely driven by economics. People are traveling, but people are getting very picky on how much they spend.
Yeah, well, that's true across the board right now. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just looked at the clock, Tacky. We're out of time. We're over time.
Probably about 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's about 11:08. So we got a little bit of a late start. So we're going
That's
to look
true.
to finish.
But we don't want to talk about everything because then what are we talk about next week?
Well, I didn't even talk about the DNC. I only watched one night of the DNC, and it was the last night. I had little interest in watching the rest of it. So Let's get to the, we can talk about the primary races. There aren't that many interesting Republican Democrat primary races other than one of our local candidates we can talk more about next time.
Okay.
I have my own predictions in my head. We'll see how close I was to my predictions next
Oh,
week.
good. Okay. That'll be fun.
And yeah, and I'm sure there'll be other activity in the State House. Probably not a lot. I mean, in fact, we got two congressional reports done. There's still other ones pending. We may see some more action in September on some ones that we can do in informal session. Oh, and we have new technology.
We
We
do?
got to bring the sales. We have new voting boards.
Oh, no kidding.
You know about this?
No.
Our voting boards were put in. We had electronic voting. The Senate does roll call by vote. We actually push buttons to vote. Red, green, pretty
Yeah.
simple, right? Complicated. But our boards were put in about 1980 something. And actually, there was a whole special commission in the 70s about upgrading technology. There's like a whole thing. There's a story. There's like an ancient story about these boards. But the company that actually provides the spare parts for these boards does not do it anymore. So no joke. Those who actually watch our session, sometimes we'll see a court officer with a broom tapping the bulbs inside the board trying to get them light up. No joke.
I love that. That's so New England.
We cannot confirm my vote went on until we see the light go on.
Okay.
So if the light doesn't go on, the member actually has to go down to the clerk and announce a verbal vote,
I see.
which will be part of the actual roll call, despite the light not working on the machine. This is actually quite normal life for us in the State House. So at one point during the July, the machine completely broke for like 30 plus minutes. So I was talking to some of the people in the chamber, like, we better not do voice votes because 106 of us doing voice votes takes a lifetime. Oh, like this board better go up. Otherwise, we're going to be here for like 30-minute votes at a time as they're reading 160 names
Yeah, for each issue.
for each issue.
Yeah.
So we're just like, this thing better go back up. So it's actually not uncommon. Many houses are in particular, do this electronic voting. So because of the fire last July, there was an electrical fire. People may not remember this,
I
but there's a lot.
remember. Yeah.
Yeah, in a new part of the building where we're trapped outside the building for more than 3 hours waiting for the smoke to clear. That they never had a chance to like fix it. So when we got out of the session in August, they already had scheduled like a weekend and a day, just basically turn the power off in the building and just do one giant deal with the issue at once, which included us replacing the electronic boards completely, just rip them out, put the new ones in. Went to all our desks, ripped out the old system, installed it individually, every single desk. So there's 160 plus third reading. So 160 desks plus the third reading sections, all upgraded, plus the upgraded microphones and audio systems. So it was a huge weekend upgrade. So yeah, it's like a legit LED board now with like your name can be read and the light, your whole name turns green for yes and red for no. And
No more light bulbs.
no more light bulb tapping. Yeah, again, something lovely and classic about it, but it's a lot easier in LED because you actually had to go up, make a like if you got a new member, you actually had to make a new board that have to light up. So it's a special like thing. You have to go up, you don't know how to slide one out, slide one back. And as you can imagine, once leadership teams set up on both sides, the names of the board stop being alphabetical and actually leadership team begins the board, Mr. Speaker, and the same with Brad Jones, the minority leader. And then you would have to like shuffle all the things around. And if a member is elected midterm because of a special election and you're like, the letter is like an L, then you have to move all the L's down and to put the new L in and you have to shift the whole board. Yeah, LEDs, people. This is going to be so much easier than ever. If you don't have to deal with like physically going to the ladder, make a whole new play. You have to make it timely because the member's going to come in to vote. And it's just, yeah, no, this is life-changing for us folks.
Wow. You've come into the 21st century.
Well, especially for the court officers and the maintenance people. This is
Right.
great. They're the ones who are probably even more happy than the members because they're the ones who have to deal with any technical problems. Things don't work. The court officers and maintenance people have to like fix it for us. They're probably grateful about the fact that this decades of just making technology limp along duct tape. They
Oh,
probably have.
neat. I'm gonna have to watch the next in-session meeting and see that. That'll be good.
Well, informal sessions are videoed, so you can see the boards come
Okay,
up.
all right.
So you can see it, but it's again, it's this is exciting. I think when you're in a building that's over 200 years old and you're in the chambers well past 100, it's the little things make you excited, people.
Yeah,
This is how our world
that's
works.
neat. But of course, you still need a stick to hold the window up.
Well, look, I had my office finally got painted for the first time in 40 years. That was like exciting. Because everybody called. I got the call from my chief of staff. She's like, "Hey, they're offering to paint the office. What am I going to say?" I'm like, "Yeah,
You'll
who's
never get that
painting
offer
anymore?
again.
Yeah, it's going to take 40 years to see paint ever. You know, if I can
Right.
get the duct tape off my carpet, there'll be a bonus." But no, actually, that's not a joke. I do have duct tape on my carpet. So this is the happy note of closing out our extended time frame of this week's talk.
That's, well, I had to make up for lost time last week.
617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. As you kind of all know, I'm fully staffed still on various levels, and my staff is running around the building on both real and virtual meetings, as well as myself. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Obviously, I take constituent cases first, and Joe, I'm seeing more unemployment cases come up this month. Again, it's a small sampling of the state, but I am getting more unemployment cases, which is a sign of which way the economy is heading in my mind. You can go to the legislature's website, malegislature.gov. As I say, you can watch our informal sessions as well as any public hearings, and you can look up a bill about me. The clerk updates the website the same time I see it in my internal system, so I'm not getting any more information faster than you guys. Tacky Chan at Facebook, you can see me at the August Moon Festival, as well as some other things, there are events, and there's going to be actually a busy September. I've got a lot of different meetings going on. At Tacky Chan on X, formerly known as Twitter. We have tackychan.org. There is a submission form page. You want to not email me, you can do it there, but you also can look up some phone numbers. They're very helpful. I probably going to do some upgrading soon. And of course, we have QATV and Joe here. Check him out in the morning for his quick 10 minutes of what's going on in the world. And you got a question or you got a concern, definitely email Joe and we'll see if we can fit you into the next show.
I'm sure we will. Have a happy, safe Labor Day, Techie.
Yeah, everyone have a wonderful Labor Day. Have a safe back to school for kids next week. And I guess you can tell we have no shortage of topics to talk about again, despite it being the summer into the fall.